Good morning. This is Valerio from CITR 101.9 CITR Radio from UBC Vancouver. Today is here with me in the show. We have the regional Amnesty International coordinator of Vancouver office, Don Wright. Hi, Don.
Hi. How are you today?
Good, thanks. How are you?
I'm well.
So nice to have you here. Thank you very much to accept my invitation. And today we want to talk about Amnesty International and human rights campaigns in Vancouver, but like global campaign, global problems. And but first, I just let you introduce yourself and just tell us what we can do with Amnesty International as volunteers, and if, for example, some students from political science or international law or whatever other kind of studies, they have this kind of desire to, you know, to spend some free hours for human rights, what they can do.
Great. So I'll start off with myself. My name is Don Wright, and I'm the regional activism coordinator for Amnesty International. So, which means that I work with our members, our groups, which includes our very active Amnesty Club here at UBC, as well as clubs in the community. And we try to make sure that the public hears about, you know, human rights issues. Some, of course, are already in the news. Others, maybe not so much coverage. So it's important for us to let people know what's happening in some of the corners of the world where there's perhaps not much media attention. And, of course, the key part for Amnesty, after we've thoroughly researched and documented human rights violations, is, in fact, to get word out about what these violations look like, and the kinds of actions we're asking governments to take to either end the violations or stop doing things or start doing things that would actually properly respect human rights. And we do this by using a lot of different avenues. Obviously, the media is an important way for us to get word out. We organize campaigns. We involve our members and the public in things like panel discussions, film nights, any way we can. Social media is a big piece nowadays, of course. Any way we can to get word out about the work that we're doing, and to then give people key opportunities for taking action. Because, of course, it's one thing to report on what's happening, which is what we do get in the news, but it's another thing to be able to offer people opportunities for actually taking action. It can be very frustrating to, you know, hear in the news or even through your social media posts that, you know, terrible things are happening. And we're sometimes left a bit helpless around, you know, what actions can we take. Well, Amnesty is certainly a well-known vehicle for taking action. People can take action by going to our website, and there's always lots of petitions people can, you know, click on right away. Or if you have more time, you can download information, or at least use the information from the website to write your own letters. And we're calling, you know, often we're calling on heads of state to pay far more attention to human rights, their obligations under international law, their obligations under their own constitutions or under their own domestic laws, or where necessary to ask for those laws to be changed. And there's kind of two parts to our work. One is where we're looking for those kinds of sort of institutional changes, legal changes, but also we focus a lot on individuals. We put a name and a face to a particular human rights violation, whether it's someone who's being tortured, someone who's been disappeared, someone who's speaking up about an issue and being arrested, detained, and possibly tortured. So a lot of different ways that people can get involved with Amnesty. Through the office, of course, we have people that come in and volunteer with us for a few hours a week or all the way up to full-time if they're available, or to help us out at an event. So when we have our own event or when we plug into someone else's event, like the Folk Music Festival, for example, we set up volunteers to help us out with shifts there. So lots of ways for people to get involved.
Right. Thank you, Don. Don, first, I would like to talk about the next coming Amnesty International Film Festival in Vancouver, which is very soon.
Yes.
I think it will start the 19th Annual Film Festival of Amnesty International On October 17th, is it right?
That's right, yeah. We have an opening film on the Friday night called Everyday Rebellion, and it's a great film. It's been winning awards at big festivals in Europe, and it looks at the way people are using creative and peaceful resistance and protest and civil disobedience to challenge what governments and corporations are telling us. Challenging repression, challenging corporate takeovers, challenging human rights violations and environmental destruction, but through peaceful means. We're seeing, protests in the streets. And I think the big climate change march in New York is probably a good example of where people are taking to the streets in peaceful ways to make their voices heard, to make sure that governments understand, where the people stand on an issue. So that's our opening night film on a Friday night. And then on the Saturday, we're showing six more films. Three of them focus in on situations in Africa. One is a bit of a historic look back at the legacy of apartheid in South Africa. The second film of the day is called FC Rwanda, and it looks at how far have we come since the genocide? Are the sort of two sides, so to speak, coming together, and is sport one of the ways that's happening? So really interesting exploration of how far has reconciliation gotten in that country in these past 20 years. And the third film that has a focus on Africa is called Miners Shot Down. And it looks at the circumstances around a massacre of workers at a mine site that was on strike, and how the government ministry, the big unions, and the security forces kind of colluded to marginalize a particular group of miners who were part of the strike, and the fact that there's not been a proper investigation of who ordered the massacre of all these protesting workers. On a more positive note, we've got Music and Coexistence, which takes us to the way musicians around the world are working together, crossing borders, crossing cultural differences, kind of show how music can maybe pave the way to peace and justice in those parts of the world.
Right. So FC Rwanda. So this sounds like a soccer team, right?
Yes, it is a soccer team. And so it's a soccer team that has a mixed component or mixed players. But they're preparing for, I guess, a major game against the military soccer team, which is clearly on the side of the ruling party in Rwanda. And not everyone's happy with the ruling party and the way that perhaps in terms of the way the film is characterizing it, is trying to say that everything is back to normal in Rwanda. And I think the film uses the meeting of these two soccer teams as a way of sort of drawing out, how far have we got with reconciliation in that country? Are we really where the government says we are, or are there still some challenges? And I think I'll let people come and watch the film. I won't give away the end.
Right. Saturday, October 18th, from 10:30, the first one, mm-hmm. till 7:20, the last one, Kismet.
Yes, and so just before we get to the final film, the one I think that a lot of listeners will be interested in, it's called Secret Trial 5, and it looks at the whole issue of security certificates in Canada. So it's our only film that focuses specifically on something that's happening in Canada, but it is something that's in the news, and the use of these security certificates, particularly versus Muslim men in Canada who are being held without charge or trial. Three have since been released, but there's two that are still in detention. So I think people will be very interested to see this film. It'll be, I think for all these films, actually, it's a Vancouver premiere. Secret Trial 5 was at some international film festivals across the country, but it's not in the Vancouver International Film Festival. So we have a chance to show that one for the first time. The final film of our festival, Kismet, is a really interesting film. It kind of asks the question, or perhaps even proposes the idea that Turkish soap operas are actually having a positive effect or positive impact on women's rights throughout the Middle East and in parts of, I guess we would call it former Eastern Europe, where women are watching these films and seeing, for example, the female lead characters, talking back to their husbands or asserting themselves in ways that they can't. For example, women in Saudi Arabia who are interviewed, can't imagine doing themselves. but also seeing how, you know, a bit of a role model, glamorous as it might be, but a bit of a role model around how men should treat women in some ways. So there, the filmmaker interviews a number of viewers in a number of cities in the region for their impressions of the impact that these Turkish soap operas are actually having.
Right. So 19th Annual Film Festival from Friday, October 17th, 6 p.m., the first Everyday Rebellion, until Saturday, October 18th, all day from 10:30 to 7:20 at Central Library in Vancouver, Alice McKay Room, so downstairs of the Central Library. And you can find every information on amnestyvancouver.org.
That's right. And the key issue or key point here is that it's all free. There are no admission charges. Everyone is welcome to attend.
Awesome. Thank you, Don. So did you, I see here on the table, you bring so nice music for us. I think it sounds like the cover African landscape.
Yeah. Yeah, it's Emmanuel Zhao. He's a Canadian hip-hop artist. He actually first settled in the U.S., but he's moved to Toronto. And I really liked the music on this CD. And I had a chance to work with him earlier this year in Calgary. He did a tour of high schools for Amnesty International. So he would tell his story about being forced to become a child soldier in South Sudan, and then his story about escaping, making his way to the U.S., and then eventually coming to Canada, where he continues to record. You know, he's got a new album coming out. He's also in a film that's about to be released with Reese Witherspoon called, what's it called? I have it written down here. It's called The Good Lie. And he's one of the three former child soldiers featured in that film.
Awesome. Very interesting, actually. So let's listen it.
Oh yeah, I'm looking for some people who's looking for peace. Maybe together we could make the war cease. Now we can send mankind to the moon, and we can reach to the bottom of the sea. That's why it's really kind of baffles me that we cannot end wars and bring peace. And we cannot change the way people act, and we cannot change the way people think. So if we sit back, chill out and relax, civilization will soon be extinct. That's why I am. I'm calling on the whole wide world. Come on, people, would you help me? Let's scream and shout, 'cause we want peace. To say the least, I dedicate this song to the common people. In the middle of this common evil, I wish the world was a little bit fair. Time to start looking at the man in the mirror. Fear is the devil's policeman. Fear make good genocide with Hitler so he can. Feel a war of genocide and our was weakened. Lighting up the land 'cause nobody was speaking. That's why I am. I'm calling on the whole wide world. Come on, people, would you help me? Let's scream and shout, 'cause we want peace. To say the least, somebody said after Rwanda, and after Rwanda, and not far from Rwanda, who's gonna shout for the poor people living and die for? The world gone deaf, the world gone blind, the world busy sitting down on the behind. Nobody cared about the poor and needy, too busy sucking up to the rich and the greedy. For every hero there's a villain, I am kidding. We got a shout sending out our city. One more time, we got no more time. We gotta figure out the way that we could all combine. Like Jericho, the world comes tumbling down. The sound of voices out of cities surround. You know what it's worth, time to put our voices to work. We gotta shake down heaven and earth. That's why I am. I'm calling on the whole wide world. Help me. Let's scream and shout, 'cause we want peace. To say the least, come on, everybody, come on.
We want peace. Manu Chao.
Yeah, it was a thrill to work with him when we did the tour of high schools in Calgary. He would open with this song. Like it was kind of some songs, some of his music. And when he came to the part where he was like, stand up, all the kids that had been carefully filed in and were sitting in their seats, he'd be going, stand up. And it would take them a moment or two to kind of think, oh, wait a second, maybe we can stand up, even though the teachers have all had them sitting down. So it was a great opening piece for his tour. And we really made an impression on a lot of high school kids in Calgary. He's going to join us to do this in Toronto, I think later this fall or maybe in the spring. So he's really supportive of Amnesty, and we're really supportive of the work that he's doing. So it's great to have that kind of support from artists, our own artists. I mean, you know, we've got the U2s and the big artists that are supportive of Amnesty, but it's good to have some homegrown artists involved with us as well.
Right. That's awesome. If I say stop tortures, I say Amnesty International big campaign. Is it right?
Yes, that's our global campaign. We launched it back in May. And when I say global campaign, it means that every section of Amnesty, every Amnesty member around the world will be working on this campaign. It's the overarching planned work for Amnesty. So we've been working on planning this campaign, and we're rolling it out piece by piece over the course of about 2 years. So it'll go through to, I guess that would be mid-2016. So there's still time for people to join the work. We're looking at the very widespread use of torture around the world. People will know that we have, there's conventions against torture, that in many countries, torture is against the law. However, we've seen an increase in the use of torture. Any given year, it might be anywhere from 100 to 120 countries where we've documented reports of torture. In the past 5 years, we've documented reports of torture in 143 countries. And if you consider there are only 194 or 193 countries in the world, that's a pretty big proportion. That's almost three quarters of the world where there are at least some reports. You know, obviously, in some cases, it might be an isolated occurrence, but in many, many places, it's widespread, systematic, regulated or not monitored, where there's no enforcement of the ban on torture, or it's not specific enough in the domestic law to actually have any effect. And even when people report that they've been tortured, very seldom is there any investigation of those reports or those allegations. Many countries where someone is brought before a judge, if they say that confession was obtained under torture, the judges are under no instructions to pay any attention to that claim, and in fact just act as if and proceed as if the confession is a legitimate confession. And so we're looking for countries to change, to properly instruct judges and to change the laws. And we're kind of up against, in some ways, the popular culture notion of torture. I mean, none of us want to talk about it or see it, but we have this idea from popular culture that it's effective and it works and that it's used only to extract, very specific information about, where is that ticking time bomb or where's the child that's been kidnapped. And, every night on TV, you can see torture being used either by police or security forces against suspects, by criminals against each other, back and forth the torture goes. And always, a second later, you see something resolved, so the confession or the location of the bomb. And then the next scene is, of course, the hero, defusing the bomb. And it all happens within that 1 hour time frame because that's what television has to work with. And we know from our research and from the literature others have produced that, in fact, that's very seldom the case where it's about a ticking bomb or a missing child. And it's far more often used in one of two ways, either to extract a false confession, where the police and or security has been too lazy to properly investigate and are instead simply, grabbing people off the street or from cafes and torturing them to the point of confessing to anything, which, of course, we all would do under those kinds of stresses, or as punishment and to send a signal to a broader social movement or a broader community. We see that particularly where it might be that you have environmentalists who are protesting a logging operation or a pipeline, they'll be arrested, detained, tortured to confess to, murder, drug trafficking, very serious crimes, and then brought before a judge with that you know, with that confession, and they actually end up serving time in jail for that. Or it might be indigenous leaders. It might be, human rights defenders, women's rights defenders. Anyone who's speaking out in ways the government doesn't want to hear is a possible target for arrest, detention, and torture. Not only to destroy that individual, but to send a very clear message to their supporters, to the community, to the broader social movements that we can do this and we will do this if you continue to speak out against what the government wants to do here, or often in the service of corporations that want the land or to be able to build their pipelines through a indigenous territory or create open pit mine in a community. So, development for resorts and things. So whatever the reason is, it's meant to send a signal that stop protesting because this is going to happen to you, and we can do this, and we can do this with impunity. No one's ever going to be charged. And so we've targeted, at the beginning of this campaign, we've targeted 5 countries where we think we can make a difference, and where we believe that there's some opening for some very concrete change. Mexico, Philippines, Uzbekistan, Morocco, and Nigeria. And this summer, our members around the world campaigned on behalf of 3 individuals in 3 countries. And in fact, in all 3 cases, we are seeing some movement. Governments have promised to open investigations into the allegations, which is always the first step. In one case, they're reviewing their policies around detention facilities. So we're seeing some progress. We're focusing this fall on Nigeria, and we're actually going to be sending postcards or at least emails and letters to a couple of the specific prisons where we know prison is taking place. So approaching the government, but also getting it right down into the prisons and letting them know that we know what's going on in those prisons. We know that in Nigeria, if you're imprisoned, you're likely to face torture as punishment and ill treatment, not to get any secrets about anything. So that's a huge issue for us. It's very clearly work that Amnesty's done over the years. And in fact, part of the reason we got the Nobel Peace Prize was the way that we exposed for the first time kind of internationally how widespread torture was. And this was back in the 70s. So it's an area or an issue that's very close to our the core of our work, to the beginnings of our work, and I think it's really resonating. We had it at a number of events. We had it at Car Free Day here in Vancouver. We had it at the Folk Music Festival. We had a big booth and banner set up. We were out at Kitsilano Day. We were up at SFU with our kit and our banners, and we actually carried our Stop Torture banner in the Pride Parade and in the Canada Day Parade in Steveston. So we really I've made a really good start to this campaign here in Vancouver. And it's one that we encourage people to get involved with.
And there is the Amnesty group in UBC campus here, right?
Yes, there is. And so I think anyone that's interested in the work we're doing, if they're on campus, track down the Amnesty Club. They meet very regularly. They have an office in the sub-building, so you should be able to find them. They also have a Facebook page and a Twitter account. So you should be able to find out when their next meeting is. And they'll definitely be working on this campaign and probably some others.
Right. So www.amnesty.org/stoptorture. This is the campaign against the torture, any kind of tortures in the world. Don, before to change topic, I would like to ask you for, for example, in this campaign, Stop Torture, which is a big campaign, how Amnesty International take action? Just on the website, by the petition online, or even sometimes in person, like bannering or, doing some demonstration, with a good impact to make this
yes.
campaign visible.
Yes, in fact, in places where there's an embassy, there have been protests in front of those embassies, demonstrations or vigils, where we have our banners out and some people have maybe ordered the T-shirts that say "Stop Torture," but certainly we have lots of banners and signs. And so in Ottawa and in other capital cities around the world, we've done very visible protests out in front of those embassies, and to let, you know, as a way to attract immediate attention to the issue, but also to attract public interest and concern around the use of torture. And we do that because, you know, getting out in front of people is really important. That people need to see us out there in front of the embassies. It's a little bit harder in Vancouver because there's only a few consulate offices and they're often up high in a tower somewhere. So, and we have done some protests in front of different, you know, office buildings where the consulate is buried somewhere inside. It's just not as interesting a visual, but we would do that. And if we had an opportunity to, or we had members interested in doing some kind of protests, we would definitely be interested in hearing what that looks like and working with people to get out in front of people. And I guess that's why we do a lot of community events where there's already a crowd, you know, coming by. They'll come by our table or booth, and we'll be able to talk to them about the campaign, give them a button that says Stop Torture, take their photo with our banner and put that up on our Instagram account, hashtag Stop Torture. You can find a lot of information and photos from our work.
Yes, I remember just last year and even this year at the Vancouver Folk Music Festival. I was there to yes. volunteer with the festival, and I just stopped by the Amnesty International table, and the first thing that I did was take a picture with big banner Stop Torture.
Yes,
even last year. So to is yeah. is is a long time that there is this kind of big campaign. And there is also by the social networks online something to do like spread and share around the Stop Torture by the hashtag. Yes. Hashtag Stop Torture.
That's right.
And it would be nice to share and to make the campaign visible as possible by the social networks. Okay, so the next music that I would like to listen is called Babylon, right?
Babylon, yes.
Babylon, and I think it's played from the same singer, Manu Chao.
Yes.
Everything here move by the clock. Our cousins, I only have a blocker. Haven't seen them for almost a year. You'll be shocked when you'll see me. The stress is in my dreadlocks. Brock, ahead of the Brock. I live on credit. Software telling you I'm in debt. I got so many cards. Visa card, MasterCard, commercial credit cards. I'm a hustler, victim, finding way to survive in the system. Sister, I'm in Babylon. Brother,
I'm in Babylon.
Grandma,
I'm in Babylon.
Please forgive me, sister.
I'm in Babylon.
Brother,
I'm in Babylon.
Grandma,
I'm in Babylon.
Please forgive me for not returning your phone. Yeah, I'm in United Kingdom, London. Home of Emma McCune, one of the best places to be. They've got good programs here to help refugees like me. You see, success would haven't come if I haven't found good people to help me here. Nyokwad Nyarwat, in your prayers, pray for UK. Things are not okay. Terrorist attack, war in Iraq, there's recession. Folks are losing their possession. The pound is going down, everybody's cussing gold and brown.
Sister, I'm in Babylon.
Brother,
I'm in Babylon.
Grandma,
I'm in Babylon.
Please forgive me, forgive me.
Sister, I'm in Babylon.
Brother,
I'm in Babylon.
Grandma,
I'm in Babylon.
Please forgive me for not returning your phone.
Hey! Nimeanza kufuata pesa kariba nyepote ya gizani mama.
Emmanuel Jal, Babylon. Very nice music. Thanks, Don, to bring us this nice music and discover this very, very good artist. I want to repeat the name, Emmanuel Jal. And the cover is called See Me Mama, the album.
That's right. This is his first album, and he's got one that's either just out or about to be released. So it'll be his second album. As an independent artist, I think he's his own label. I'm not sure who distributes him, but it's his own label for recording. So that's great.
All right, and now, so today we have here Don Wright from Amnesty International here on 101.9 CITR Radio from Vancouver, UBC, and this is Valerio. Remember to our dear listeners that I'm replacing Linda for a few weeks. She's away, usually this time there is Give 'Em the Boots, the Italian program, and now I'm Italian, and sometimes I like to speak in Italian, but today I had this big chance to interview Don Wright from Amnesty International office and in Vancouver, and we will have other Tuesdays to play Italian music and to talk about Italy. So Don, if I say My Body, My Rights, this is another campaign.
That's right. It's kind of the, if you think of Stop Torture as being our biggest international campaign, the My Body, My Rights is kind of the second tier. And it's really getting at, in many ways, how do we better protect sexual and reproductive rights of everyone, but especially of young women and adolescent girls. So we're reaching out to people around the world to pay attention to how governments restrict sexual and reproductive rights in many, many different ways, and the need for them to pay much more attention to the existing international laws and perhaps push governments to bring in even better international protections for sexual reproductive rights, as well as sexual identity, sexual gender rights, a whole range of rights that come under that kind of category of our the integrity of our bodies, and how that needs to be respected by governments and societies and communities. because the, you know, we you know, something that Amnesty does is we produce a lot of numbers and statistics to kind of get at, you know, what's the scope of the problem, and, you know, is it really an issue that we need to be concerned with? And I think the numbers are sometimes very startling. For example, same-sex sexual activity is currently illegal in at least 76 countries. And so that's something that obviously we and many other organizations are working against, where young people have very little access to information about sexual reproduction and sexually transmitted diseases or infections, where the highest rate is, in fact, you know, that 15 to 24 age category, 340 million new cases involving sexually transmitted infections. 3,000 young people are infected with HIV every day, according to UNAIDS, that information. You know, adolescent girls are becoming pregnant and giving birth in huge numbers. 142 million adolescent girls will likely give birth by 2020. So we've got these numbers. And on the other hand, we've got, you know, 40% of women of childbearing age live in countries where abortion is banned, restricted, or not accessible. 47,000 pregnant women die every year due to complications from unsafe abortions. And 14 million, and that's probably a low estimate, young girls give birth every year as a result of coerced sex and unwanted pregnancy. So we have quite a range of campaign points around this My Body, My Rights, looking at, you know, the big issues of sex, pregnancy, marriage, and violence. And so this intersects with our ongoing work to end violence against women as well. And it's about people being able to make decisions about their own sexuality, their reproductive lives, and to be free from criminal prosecution or other sanctions. So we're calling for abortion to be decriminalized. In other words, no one should be criminally held accountable for either seeking or providing abortions. And this, you know, is a bit of a controversial issue in some parts of the world, but it's rooted in the belief that girls and women have a right to decide, you know, choose for themselves, that this should not be criminalized, because it doesn't. You do then force women to access unsafe abortions, which results in very high levels of death. So it's quite a campaign, and it's a campaign that in many ways is aimed fairly directly at young people. And in many parts of the world where we have active amnesty groups with young people, they're the ones driving the campaign and making sure that it's reaching. There is a lot of peer-to-peer work. They helped us, young people helped us to develop some human rights education materials, and that's being made available to, they're making that available to other young people to take it into their classrooms and their communities, so that young people know what their rights should be or what their rights are, and can push for those rights in their home countries.
Right. So My Body, My Rights. This is the sexual and reproduction campaign of Amnesty International. And you can also find information and online petitions on website www.amnestyinternational.org. Actually, amnesty.org, right?
Yeah, actually, the best place to go to is amnesty.ca. That's the Canadian website. So your Canadian listeners might be interested in the Canadian website. Amnesty.org is the international website, and it's got the library of Amnesty materials. So if you're ever wondering, well, what did Amnesty say back in 1980 about some issue, you can actually go and find it there. Or if you're interested in, you know, just current events, what we've been talking about today mostly is our plan campaign work and stuff that we roll out kind of on our schedule with lots of materials and research behind it. But of course, there's also stuff happens in the world. And so you can go to the amnesty.org website and look up, you know, what's happening. What's the last thing we've had to say about what's happening in Syria or Iraq or Central African Republic or even in Canada, and see, you know, what have we been reporting on? What are our concerns? And what are we asking people to do? And who's at risk? So there's all kinds of information you can get from those two levels of website.
Right. So thank you, Don. And I just want to tell to our listeners, I was, for the first time, in the one of the first times in the office in Vancouver. The office is just in downtown, West Pender Street, which is the block.
Yeah, it's 319 West Pender.
Okay. I was there, and I had the chance to watch a very interesting, very interested movie from Russia, where I worked for 1 year in St. Petersburg, and I could see this movie, like communicate the reality of people, how they have to hide their private life, and they're not free to to do everything, like the normal actions that we do here or in other countries, like in Italy or in other country where there is freedom. In Russia, unfortunately, it's not possible. For example, in this movie, which was called,
Stand?
Stand, yes. It was very, it was an independent movie. Made by Amnesty, right?
No, but it was just shared with us. But it was independently made. Film.
Okay, yeah. Okay. And in this movie, what was really interesting to see is when the man is not free to live his private life, the country and the system of the country is all against you, and everything is like different and seems like no life, and how can I say it, Don? Like, it's very, very sad.
Very messed up.
Very
yes.
messed up.
Yes.
And Amnesty International, it's also, for this... against this reality, and for speak up and make visible this terrible situation, and and try to do something according to the international law and human rights.
Yes, we've got a lot of work we're doing on Russia, and we actually did quite a focus bit of work on Russia just prior to the Sochi Olympics, and we had a number of concerns, freedom of expression being a really important issue that is very challenging in Russia around their clampdown on freedom of expression, on nonprofit organizations, their gay propaganda law that made even... outwardly being gay or lesbian in some way, talking about it, teaching about it was made illegal. And so we fought against those and other issues in Russia. and we continue to press the government to change those laws so that gays, lesbians, bisexuals, transgendered persons can... freely express themselves. I mean, it is related to freedom of expression, but it's also related to freedom of sexual orientation, of sexual identity, and being able to, as you pointed out, be able to freely express yourself and just be yourself in the community in ways that we're increasingly expecting to be able to do here in Canada and in many parts of Europe. But for that to be possible in Russia, and the film you mentioned takes us through the journey of a man who's very distraught by what's happening around him, and it ends up being very self-destructive, in fact. But I think the point of the film is, in the end, he stood tall despite the fact that he'd been beat up by a group of homophobic attackers. Kind of put himself into that position, but I think it was. He needed to prove to himself that he could stand up to this. And a very moving film. I'm not sure when it might come to Vancouver. I know it's playing in some festivals, but I haven't seen a notice of it coming to Vancouver. But it'd be well worth watching for. It's called Stand. And it does link to our My Body, My Rights campaign. And every summer we do a lot of work around Pride. I mentioned earlier we were in the Pride Parade with our banners. And we're really well received when we're in the parade. I mean, it's amazing to be... in a parade with our Amnesty banner and people running off the sides to hug whichever volunteer happens to be at the front, and actually thank them profusely for the work that Amnesty has done to try to promote LGBT rights as human rights. So the response we get from the LGBT community here in Canada, from the broader community for the work we're doing, and in Europe, whenever there's a Pride event, particularly in a country where it may not be safe to do so, our Amnesty members from throughout Europe will go to that city and be part of both participating in the parade, but also witnessing to make sure that the police are offering proper protection rather than being part of the problem. Because there's a long history in some countries where the police have joined in with the attacks on the walkers, on the Pride parade, or at the very least have stood back from the attacks. So making sure that police are offering protection is a really key issue for people to express themselves.
All right. Human right. Now, in this last minutes that we have today, I would like to touch a big argument, a big topic from India between December 2nd and December 3rd, 1984. A gas leak happened, a big incident in India, considered still now the world's worst industrial disaster as toxic leak. In Bhopal, in this nice cultural city in the center of India, in that day between the 2nd and 3rd December 1984, the Union Carbide India Limited pesticide plant in Bhopal, Madhya Pradesh.
It's a state, yeah.
Yes. What happened is that over 500,000 people were exposed to methyl. Maybe my pronunciation is not good. Methyl isocyanate.
You're braver than I would never try to pronounce that.
Like gas and other chemicals, the toxic substance made its way in and around the shanty towns located near the plant. The plant that I mentioned, it's called Madhya Pradesh. It's an Indian name. The official immediate death toll was 2,260 people. The government of Madhya Pradesh confirmed a total of 3,787 deaths related to the gas release. Others estimate 80,000 died within 2 weeks, and another 8,000 or more have since died from gas-related disease. So this is a huge toxic disaster happened in 1984, and I knew the first time about this disaster when I was in Italy through Greenpeace, because I volunteer with Greenpeace, because this is a toxic disaster, environmental disaster. And I remember in 2000, like 5 years ago, so probably 2009, from India, from Bhopal, in Europe, they came two or three people, like testimonials from this disaster, and by old bus, they brought there an old bus, and they did with this Indian bus a European tour to show up the videos and the story about Bhopal disaster. And not just Greenpeace, but even Amnesty International was together with these people and to support them. So it's not just environmental disaster, but it's also a big human rights disaster, because still now people waiting for recompensation after 30 years. So this is the 3rd year's anniversary, right, Don?
That's right.
What's going on in Vancouver about that?
Yes, so Amnesty, as you can imagine, will be marking the 30th anniversary. It is going to be a case that will be part of our Right for Rights campaigning. So that actually happens on December 10th or in the days leading up to that, where we'll be asking our members to call on the Prime Minister to actually clean the site. The site is still sitting there, all this pesticide plant infrastructure and containers and piping and so on is still sitting there rusting and leaching into the groundwater. You can't drink the water anywhere near the plant. So we are calling for a full cleanup. And of course, as you mentioned, the lack of medical assistance. There needs to be much more medical assistance because the numbers you read are the same numbers as I have. You know, 500,000 people were exposed and are continuing to suffer, injury and disability, and the health of women has been particularly affected. And people have a right to be free from the harms to their health, and they have a right to have access to clean drinking water, and they have a right to have this plant cleaned up. And so we haven't decided exactly what we're going to do in Vancouver, but certainly we're on the edge of starting to think about it, and we probably will have a meeting sometime soon where we'll ask people are interested in this campaign work. Possibly we'll see if there's some local Greenpeace members that want to join us. We've worked with them in the past. And see if it might be a panel discussion. I believe a new film is coming out, so we might see if we can track down the film and do a film screening. And it might be that we do it somewhere downtown. I think most classes will be over by then, so I'm not sure if we'll do something on campus, but it's certainly something that we can have in mind to really make that final push to the Indian government to clean it up and to make sure that people's health is remedied, that people have access to medicine and assistance as they continue to struggle.
So who is interested in having more information about this disaster that happened 30 years ago online, you can find even by Wikipedia, but for sure Amnesty International website, yes. Greenpeace website, you can find more information regarding environmental disaster and the human rights big problem that still is running in Bhopal. And for sure I will let you know, listeners, what will be the coming soon event about Bhopal in Vancouver, because this topic is in my heart for some reason. I don't know. I was in Milan in Italy when Bhopal Testimonies, they came, and I could interview them in person, like to listen to them and watching the videos that they brought in Europe to let us know what happened in Bhopal, in this little city of India. And I don't know, that's such like a huge problem. And I also protested in front of one of the offices in Milan. There is an office of Union Carbide that is called different. DuPont? Dow.
Dow Chemical.
Bottom. Dow Chemical.
Yeah.
So they change name often now because they want... It's like... I think it's like a marketing strategy for them because they don't want to keep the original name, right? Mm-hmm. Because... But still, they are opened and it's international company. And we protest with Amnesty International and Greenpeace. We protest by banners early in the morning. We block the employees of the office, and we hand out flyers and information on what happened now 30 years ago. But that was the 25th anniversary. Yep. Anyways, now... I would like to. We would love to listen the last song by Emmanuel Jal. It's called Kush.
Kush.
And yeah.
Great.
Kushman. I'm a Kushman.
I'm from Kush.
I'm a Kushman.
Attention, seeing what's about. Now I'm coming home from everywhere I roam. Cause I know where I'm from and now I'm taking on. Tall, dark and fearless with a smooth skin. I'm from where civilization begins. I'm giving you time to figure it out, but just in case you ain't any doubt. Shot. My dark skin shine bright when it hit the sunlight. We've been around, seen Egyptian time with technical, logical, and scientific minds. Cause we the first day.
University,
first
technology,
first day.
Astrology,
first day. Schematic, mathematic, physic, man, you never given the line in the jungle where the first to tell it.
This is Babylon, Emmanuel Jal, and here I want to say big thank you to Don today to report some news from Amnesty International. Don is the Vancouver coordinator, regional coordinator of Amnesty International Vancouver office. So thank you, Don.
Well, thank you very much for having me today, and I look forward to seeing everyone at the film festival.
Awesome. So I want to just remind our listeners the Amnesty International Film Festival will start October 17th, Friday 17th in the night from 6.
Yeah, from about 6 p.m.
Central Library.
One film and then all day Saturday. So amnestyvancouver.org is where you'll find the program. It's, as I said, it's all free. So no excuses.
Right, no excuses. That's true. Thank you, Don, again. Bye. Ciao.
Ciao.
Drop to that one. All we need now is like a hook line. You know what? I've got actually the perfect one. Bass line. Oh, wicked. Now put a donk on it.